is that many people are increasingly just actually recognizing how dangerous the United States is to the world and wanting a more significant change than just voting for a different presidential election candidate. The people that Biden is allegedly relying on to vote for him in November are increasingly people that are absolutely outraged by the fact that the United States is perpetrating genocide as we speak.
All right, on that note, we come to the end of this show. Let me thank my guests, Charlotte Cates in Vancouver, Peter Ford in Manchester.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. Here we enlighten you with ayahs 36 through 38 from the Surah Nahl, recited by Qasim Razi.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم ولقد بعثنا في كل أمة رسولا أن اعبدوا الله واجتنبوا الطاغوت فَمِنْهُمْ مَنْ هَدَى اللَّهُ وَمِنْهُمْ مَنْ حَقَّتْ عَلَيْهِ الضَّلَالَةِ فَسِيرُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ فَانْظُرُوا كَيْفَ كَانَ عَاقِبَةُ كذبين إن تحرص على هداهم فإن الله لا يهدي من يضل وما لهم من ناصرين وأقسموا بالله جهد أيمانهم لا يبعث الله من يموت بلى وعدا عليه حقا ولكن أكثر الناس لا يعلمون بلى وعدا عليه حقا ولكن أكثر الناس لا يعلمون صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. And certainly we raised in every nation an apostle, saying, serve Allah and shun the Satan. So there were some of them whom Allah guided, and there were others against whom error was due. Therefore travel in the land, then see what was the end of the rejecters. If you desire further guidance, yet surely Allah does not guide him who leads astray, nor shall they have any helpers. And they swear by Allah with the most energetic of their oath, Allah will not raise up him who dies. Yeah, is a promise binding on him, quite true, but most people do not know.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: more Palestinians die of hunger and dehydration as the Israeli regime's genocidal war on the Gaza Strip enters its 153rd day. South Africa urges the World Court to take additional emergency measures against Israel to prevent imminent famine and starvation in Gaza. And China says the deadly Israeli onslaught on Gaza is a tragedy for humankind and a disgrace for civilization, calling for an immediate ceasefire. Hello and welcome everybody here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News.
Our top story for this half hour: Israel's indiscriminate attacks continue to claim more Palestinian lives after 5 months into the regime's genocidal war on the besieged Gaza Strip. At least six people were killed in airstrikes and shootings by Israeli forces who targeted civilians in central Gaza. In the west of Gaza City, Israeli forces once again opened fire on Palestinian civilians waiting for aid trucks, killing at least five people and injuring over 20 others. Meanwhile, malnutrition and dehydration continue to wreak havoc on the Palestinian population. A 15-year-old teenager and a 72-year-old man have died in two hospitals due to lack of food and water. Gaza's medical sources say the number of people dying of malnutrition and dehydration in Gaza has surged to 20. More than 30,700 Gazans, most of them women and children, have been killed since the Israeli onslaught started early last October. Palestinian writer and political analyst Jafar Amini is joining us now to offer us some more insight on the situation in Gaza. Mr. Amini, please talk to us about the humanitarian catastrophe that we see is unfolding before our very eyes in the Gaza Strip. A war crime, no doubt, is taking place as the Israeli regime, apart from the genocide that it's committing with its onslaught, is also weaponizing starvation and using hunger as a weapon of war against the Gazan populace.
Well, this is not new. Israel, since the siege of Gaza 17 years ago, they have a policy called keep them on a diet, whereby every calorie that is going into Gaza is counted, checked, and either allowed or hold. Since the beginning of this latest war against the Palestinian people, they are very open about it. No food, no water, no medicine, no fuel, no electricity, nothing will go into Gaza, which is a call, an open call for a genocide. And every single country in the world is still saying Israel has a right to defend itself, and some of them are calling for ceasefire, but the people who matter, i.e. the big powers, like the United States of America, calling for repose. Even when Israel killed 119 people last week who were queuing for food out of starvation and thirst, the United States still used their veto at the Security Council to condemn this killing of Palestinians in cold blood because of the language. They were not happy with the language that was used. And this is not the first time. Since October the 7th of last year, America used the veto 5 times in favor of Israel. On top of that, the so-called civilized Western powers, when they talk about Gaza, Palestine, and the Israelis, their main concern is always the release of the Israeli hostages. No talk of the Palestinian hostages and prisoners who are languishing in Israeli jails for years without charge. They just collect them off the street and put them in jail and deny them every right in the world. During the last 5 months, Israel collected further 5,000 prisoners from the West Bank and Gaza, and nobody mentions them. We live in a warped world, and while America is at the helm, Israel will continue to get away with murder, because starvation, using food and water and medicine as a weapon of war, is a war crime and a crime against humanity. But who is going to enforce the law?
Thanks a lot. Palestinian writer and political analyst Jaffa Rimini joining us from Fremantle, Australia. Elsewhere, Palestinian delegation is in New York to meet with the UN chief and the president of the Security Council to highlight Gaza's catastrophic conditions. Two medics accompanying the group recount their harrowing experience and loss of their family members during a presser held alongside the Palestinian envoy to the UN. Let's take a listen.
You guys heard it in TVs and everything, but honestly, we lived every single day for 13 days in Gaza, and it wasn't easy. You saw all what you're going to hear this. I saw it in my eyes, and I've treated patients, and I cried every single day. And thank God that I came back here to at least be their voice, not my voice, their voice. I'm a maxillofacial surgeon. Lived in the state. I volunteered on a mission, so I joined a mission recently to the European hospital in Gaza. I stayed there for 2 weeks. We lived at the hospital. We treated a lot of patients. We, as a group, we treated more than 200 patients. Myself, I treated 16 surgeries. It's not the surgeries you've done, it's the amount of displaced people and the active refugee camp that I lived in. People live in the tents, live in the floor, live in the wards.
Since the 7th of October, my family members, over 150 of them, have been murdered by Israel's brutal assault on Gaza, either by Israeli bombardment, snipers, or the cruel and ruthless denial of humanitarian aid, with no access to clean water, with food, equitable health care services. Thousands more have been tormented with horrific injuries, forced starvation, trauma, and displacement to evacuation camps and catastrophic living conditions. In December, one of our family members, Sabri Al-Farra, was murdered in his home by an Israeli airstrike with his 9 young children. His unfortunate wife survived. She was 8 months pregnant. She was displaced to an evacuation camp where she gave birth to her baby boy 1 month later in January. Her child, her newborn infant, died 20 days later from the cold and the harsh conditions in the camps. Today, none of us are here for condolences. We're not here for apologies. We're here for immediate action. We have demonstrated that every minute signifies the loss of a life, the starvation of a child, and so we need an immediate and permanent, not temporary, permanent ceasefire now.
Jamie McGoldrick, a UN humanitarian coordinator for the occupied Palestinian territory, has warned of serious acute malnutrition in northern parts of Gaza. He says the UN will assess on Thursday how it can use an Israeli military-controlled road to deliver more humanitarian aid to desperate Palestinians.
Hunger has reached catastrophic levels, and especially in the north of Gaza, which we haven't served for weeks. And yesterday's convoy attempt was again disrupted because of the ransacking of that and the insecurity. Their children are now, as we see in the images on the media, who are dying of hunger-related diseases. And in order to prevent that from happening, we have to have a plan that allows us to, you know, prevent famine. That we need to significantly scale up the humanitarian assistance in there. And that would be that, you know, we have to use this military road, this fence road at the side, on the eastern side, to allow material to come from the crossing point at Kerem Shalom and Rafah all the way up to the north and into the north. This road runs parallel to the edge of Gaza Strip. It's on the eastern side, and it's a road that the military used to use their own supply lines and deliver, moving in. They have a number of crossing points into below Karni. There's a place called Berry, which is the crossing point they'll probably use. The idea would be that you get the trucks scanned, and there'll be 14 or 15 trucks from WFP will be scanned. They go outside onto the road, and then they enter into this route. I think it's called Route 93 or 96. And then you go north on that road. There is no traffic on that road other than military traffic. And we have to get up at least 300 trucks a day. Right now, we're lucky if we're getting about 150. And so to address those issues properly, we have to do that. And these other options like airdrops, these are helpful, but these are not going to address the significant needs, which can only be done by road transport. And that's something we have to do. And it's when you get a time like Ramadan coming up, it pulls into focus how desperate people find themselves in. So I think people are looking for a way to get back to something normal, something more stable and something more certain. And hopefully that will happen in the near future, and hopefully that we get some sort of pause which will allow us to stabilize people's health, people's food security.
South Africa has once again asked the International Court of Justice to take additional emergency measures against Israel amid the regime's genocidal war in Gaza. South Africa urged the World Court to take immediate measures to stop an imminent tragedy and save Gazans from dying of starvation. It also warned about the threat of a looming all-out famine in the war-ravaged territory. Pretoria urged the World Court to force Israel to take immediate and effective measures to enable the provision of the desperately needed humanitarian aid in Gaza. It said such measures must be taken without a new round of hearings because of the extreme urgency of the situation in the coastal territory. In a case filed by South Africa in January, the ICJ had ordered Israel to refrain from any acts that could fall under the Genocide Convention. The Chinese foreign minister says that his country supports the full UN membership of a Palestinian state, urging other members of the Security Council to refrain from creating any obstacle to the issue.
China firmly supports the just cause of the Palestinian people to restore their legitimate national rights and has always been committed to a comprehensive and lasting solution to the Palestinian issue. We support Palestine's membership as full United Nations member state and call on certain Security Council members not to set obstacles to this.
Wang Yi also called the ongoing deadly Israeli onslaught on Gaza a tragedy for humankind and a disgrace for civilization. He reiterated Beijing's calls for an immediate ceasefire, saying there are no justifications for the continuation of war and no excuse for the killing of civilians. The top Chinese diplomat said that historical injustices suffered by the Palestinian people cannot continue for generations without being corrected. Beijing has always been sympathetic to the Palestinian cause and supportive of a two-state solution. Well, in the UK, government ministers are considering expanding the definition of extremism and banning members of parliament from engaging with protest groups, among them pro-Palestine march organizers. Human rights campaigners say the move is an insult to democracy. Sagputa reports.
The right to speak out, to protest, the very fabric of democratic rights, once again under attack in the UK, as the government updates its definition of extremism and is about to introduce a potential ban on parliamentarians joining protests. Recommendations from the government's advisor on political violence, John Woodcock, also known as Lord Walney, who is a former chair of Labour Friends of Israel, call on leaders of the mainstream political parties to instruct their MPs to employ a zero-tolerance approach to groups that use disruptive tactics or fail to stop, quote, hate on marches. In the crosshairs, climate activist groups such as Extinction Rebellion and Palestine Solidarity Campaign, who have organized the enormous peaceful mobilizations for Gaza since October last year.
This is an affront to democracy and an indication of a weak and decaying government's descent into authoritarianism, totally out of touch with the British people and actually very much out of keeping with the British values that they claim to champion.
Ahead of Walney's recommendations, and after the by-election in Rochdale, Greater Manchester, that handed pro-Palestine campaigner George Galloway a thumping victory, a speech by the Prime Minister vilifying the pro-Palestinian protests demanding a ceasefire in Gaza.
In recent weeks and months, we have seen a shocking increase in extremist disruption and criminality. What started as protests on our streets has descended into intimidation, threats, and planned acts of violence.
Critics say comments like those about peaceful demonstrations are a threat to the long tradition of freedom of protest and expression in the country.
His assertions are totally false. I mean, you know, the claims of an increase in anti-Semitism, of extremism, there is no evidence for that. I mean, this is just pure invention and another indication, frankly, of how weak this government really is. To have a special address to the nation as if there was some sort of state of emergency. And some people that spoke to me thought that we'd declared war on Russia. What it was George Galloway, the leader of the Workers' Party, getting elected as a Member of Parliament. I mean, that should be celebrated, not attacked in that way. It's just absolutely ridiculous.
The new changes are yet to be announced and legislated, but the political temperature is rapidly rising in the UK.
In its 2024 World Report, Human Rights Watch says that the UK government's practices and policies have severely curtailed domestic human rights protections. Others say the country is at risk of turning into a police state masquerading as a democracy. The question now is, how deep will those erosions go? And will the MPs in the building behind me allow them to continue? Saeed Purizep, London.
Iran has strongly condemned a joint statement by the United Arab Emirates and Kuwait regarding the three Persian Gulf islands of the Greater and Lesser Tombs and Abu Musa. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani dismissed the two countries' meddlesome allegations, saying they were devoid of any political and legal value. He said the three islands are an inseparable and eternal part of Iran, asserting that the country's territorial integrity will never be open to negotiations. The three islands have historically been part of Iran, proof of which can be found and corroborated by countless historical, legal, and geographical documents. Tehran has repeatedly rejected the UAE's claims over the islands, saying they are an inseparable part of the country and will remain as such. Well, the first international conference on family health is underway in Tehran. The two-day event has turned into an opportunity for participating countries to familiarize themselves with Iran's national health program, described by the WHO as a successful model. Gisumi Shahmadi has the details.
Health diplomacy in full swing. Iran's successful national family health program and referral system detailed for healthcare officials from 14 countries as they take part in panel discussions on the second day of the first international conference on family health, dubbed PAC for UAC. In other words, elaborating on how primary health care can be oriented to provide universal health coverage. That is why this conference can be considered an essential step for achieving the WHO Sustainable Development Goals, or in short, 2030 SDGs.
Iran is the first country in the region to start healthy cities in 1991 in three settlements in Tehran. I think the movement is very well taken in Iran, and we are close to 2030 and achieving SDG. This will be an opportunity to have all the sectors, including the community, to work under one vision, which is health and well-being.
I think Iran, they developed too much in the health sector. And we try to cooperate with Iran too, in the health sector, and we appreciated that the minister of Iran, attended a conference in Qatar last week.
The success of Iran's UAC plan, which relies greatly on its well-functioning PAC network, as demonstrated in this international conference, can pave the way for stronger bilateral relations with participating countries. The participants of this conference are impressed with the level of development of Iran's healthcare sector, and they're hoping that their bilateral relations with Iran will allow them to achieve similar goals. Gisum Shahani, Tehran.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
On Thursdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who has taken away the shadowy night by His power and brought the sight-giving day through His mercy. He has clothed me in its brightness and given me its favor. O Allah, just as Thou hast spared me for this day, so also spare me for its likes. Bless the Prophet Muhammad and his household, and torment me not in it and in other nights and days by allowing me to commit unlawful acts and to clothe myself in sins. Provide me with its good, the good of all within it, and the good of everything after it, and turn away from me its evil, the evil of all within it, and the evil of everything after it. O Allah, by the protective compact of Islam, I seek mediation with Thee, and by the inviolability of the Quran, I rely upon Thee. By Muhammad, the Chosen, Allah bless him and his household, I seek intercession with Thee. So recognize my protective compact, by which I hope my need will be granted. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, decree for me on Thursday 5 things, which none embraces but Thy generosity, and none supports but Thy favors. Health through which I may have the strength to obey Thee. worship by which I may deserve thy plentiful reward, plenty in my state through lawful provision, and that thou makest me secure in the places of fear through thy security, and placest me in thy fortress against the striking of worries and sorrows. Bless Muhammad and his household, and make my seeking his mediation as an intercessor give profit on the day of resurrection. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful.
Limelight. Washington is in control. Washington wants the Israeli regime's genocide against Palestinians to continue. It just wants to pretend that it is aiding Palestinians while it helps the Zionist regime murder them. Washington clearly sees the airdrops as a means to that end. We have taken a look at some of the world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay with us for the second part of this article. Electronic Intifada has covered this story and tells us more. International aid agencies and even a former US official dismissed the Western regime's airdrops as ineffective and even counterproductive. Oxfam does not support US airdrops to Gaza, which would mostly serve to relieve the guilty consciences of senior US officials, whose policies are contributing to the ongoing atrocities and risk of famine in Gaza, said Scott Paul, an official with a UK-based charity Oxfam. While Palestinians in Gaza have been pushed to the absolute brink, dropping a paltry symbolic amount of aid into Gaza with no plan for its safe distribution would not help and be deeply degrading to the Palestinians, Scott Paul added. Instead of indiscriminate airdrops in Gaza, the United States should cut the flow of weaponry to Israel that are used in indiscriminate attacks, push for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza, and push for the release of captives, and insist that Israel uphold its duty to provide humanitarian aid, access, and other basic services. Airdrops are insufficient, expensive, dangerous, and only helpful when there are no other delivery options, said David Hardin, a former official with USAID, the US International Development Agency. Airdrops are primarily for the Biden administration's benefit, to paper over a massive policy failure. In recent days, thousands of Palestinians gathered on a beach in central Gaza as Jordan and France dropped supplies, some of which fell into the sea. Palestinians ran into the cold water to try to retrieve some of it. A few days later, the Jordanian Air Force accidentally dropped packages into southern Israel instead of northern Gaza. For Jordan and for other regional countries, these stunts are likely intended for domestic consumption, an effort to pacify public rage over their government's inaction to stop a genocide that is about to enter its sixth month. Jordan has even involved an Instagram influencer, an American filmmaker, and invited US radio network NPR along on one of the airdrops. But there is no sign the population has been placated as Jordanians continue to demonstrate and call an end to the Jordanian trade with the Zionist regime, including the supply of agricultural produce to the Israeli regime. The United Kingdom, which has consistently opposed an immediate ceasefire in Gaza, also participated in one such airdrop operation in collaboration with Jordan. France, although it has called for an immediate ceasefire, remains a staunch backer of the Zionist regime and is resisting calls to halt arms exports to Israel. Canada, an implacable enemy of Palestinian rights and another arms supplier to the Tel Aviv regime, is also set to airdrop aid into Gaza, possibly also in collaboration with Jordan. And just as egregiously, the Netherlands, which supplies spare parts for Israeli regime warplanes as they bomb innocent Palestinians, also took part in an airdrop operation with Jordan last month. Although a Dutch court of law ordered a halt to the exports of spare parts to Israel, the Dutch government, determined to continue assisting the genocide, has vowed to appeal the decision. By facilitating airdrops on behalf of such countries, Jordan is effectively helping them whitewash their role in the genocide. Now the United States, the country most responsible for the genocide, alongside the Israeli regime, wants a piece of the action. Some see this as a sign of Washington's weakness, but this is a mistake. I've seen Israel humiliate previous US administrations, but aside from murderous 1967 Israeli airstrike against US Navy ship Liberty, now forcing the United States to do airdrops of aid to Gaza, as if the United States is no better than Egypt and Jordan, is Israel's worst humiliation of the United States I've ever seen. Robert Ford, a former US diplomat, wrote on X, formerly known as Twitter. Robert Ford added, "I should add that the United States will do humanitarian aid drops to Gazans if the Israeli Air Force graciously agrees not to shoot down the American planes over Gaza." That sentiment may be understandable, but it turns reality on its head. Washington is in control. Washington wants the genocide to continue in Gaza. It just wants to pretend that it is aiding Palestinians while it helps the Israeli regime murder them. Washington clearly sees the airdrops as means to that end.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Tonight on Exposé, Western and Israeli entity broadcast media falsely claim that Zionist Israeli warplanes targeted weapon depots belonging to Hezbollah in South Lebanon, when in reality they targeted residential areas. Now, Zionist mainstream media deceitfully claim that the Islamic Republic of Iran cautioned Hezbollah not to spark full-scale war with Zionist Israel, when in reality U.S. media openly reported that a large-scale Israeli entity campaign against Hezbollah is the last thing the U.S. wants right now. And an opinion poll revealed that 90% of the Lebanese hold the United States of America fully accountable for Zionist Israel's continued attacks on Lebanon and the Gaza Strip. Welcome to Exposé, the show that leaves no stone unturned. Relentless effort is what we are seeing from the Israeli occupation regime to conceal its army's daily losses, restrict information related to its soldiers, and continue spreading media fabrications concerning the Lebanese Islamic Resistance Hezbollah's advances on the northern front with Lebanon. Let us hear from Fuad Itayim, our broadcast expert and writer at The Cradle, for more about it in Fake News Exposé. Thank you for being with us, Fuad. Now, if you follow closely Western and Israeli entity media, you find numerous news reports expressing confusion and loss when reporting about South Lebanon and the open front with the Lebanese resistance, Hezbollah. Now, Fuad, if you can help us out here with what kind of strategy is that is being used by the Zionist media or the Western media, for that matter, when reporting about this open conflict with the Lebanese resistance on the northern border with Palestine.
Yeah, so the main strategy is and always has been portraying Lebanon as a terrorist stronghold. So Let's begin with how the open front in South Lebanon is rarely ever reported on in Western media. Mm-hmm. And when it is, they fail to mention that Israel is actually targeting residential areas, industrial sites that have nothing to do with Hezbollah. So our first report for today is a Wall Street Journal report, which basically implies that Israel targeted a weapons depot belonging to Hezbollah in the town of Ghaziyeh near Saida, which is like 30 kilometers away from Beirut. Before we see what the Zionists really targeted, let's take a look at some other similar reports by The Sun and by TBN News. So here The Sun claims that Hezbollah terror cells were taken out in Israeli strikes. But it's clear from the Israeli army footage that's provided that these are residential areas because you can see the homes.
You could see, even if you don't know the area, Fuad, that it is a residential area. And you could see the mosque at the end of the footage as well.
And the color of the rooftops of the homes, it's clearly a residential area. So the next one, we have TBN News claiming that Israel targeted Hezbollah's vast underground tunnel network, which they claim has been built with the help of the North Koreans. Now, Western and Hebrew media has been reporting on this a lot lately, but honestly, we don't really know where they got any of it from.
So you're telling me that Hezbollah has built tunnels in South Lebanon with the help of North Korea, and they have footage to show us this?
That's what they're claiming.
For more than 30 years, Hezbollah has dug hundreds of kilometers of tunnels through the stone bedrock in southern Lebanon. Some of these tunnels are 40 to 80 meters deep, cut and developed with the help of North Korean technology. Published a report this week giving some details of this problem. This included an assessment that the tunnels were so extensive that if some of them were blown up, it could cause an earthquake and possibly landslides. This would lead to a humanitarian disaster, which Hezbollah would no doubt exploit to its own advantage. Began as early as the 1980s, but gained momentum in the late 1990s as a possibility of an Israeli invasion loomed larger in the minds of Hezbollah's leadership. The report goes on to say that Israel dropped bombs in southern Lebanon in order to burn the vegetation and discover tunnel openings. 12 such openings were discovered using this method, which is entirely legal under international law, by the way. These tunnel openings were subsequently bombed and will not be available.
That is beyond, hysterical, because
even, let's say, Hezbollah actually has tunnels for it underground. We as Southerners have never heard them dig tunnels. Second, what kind of a footage? They didn't say where they got that footage from. I'm pretty sure that's not a Hezbollah person.
And of course, they have to use CGI because there's nothing else.
Exactly, building that tunnel. And the thing that really caught my eye at the end when he said that Israel was using weapons that is internationally allowed, but they literally showed us white phosphorus, which is internationally banned from being used even in wartime. And that tells a lot about even the theory or the hypothesis that there are tunnels which they weren't even able to cross and investigate to begin with. I mean, 100%. That's fake news, isn't it?
Definitely. Mm-hmm. So it's completely unfounded. Mm-hmm. Now back to the Ghaziyya strike. Mm-hmm. So not 30 minutes after the strike happened, Lebanese media was at the scene of the bombing. And they were talking to the owner of the electrical generator company that Israel claimed was a weapons depot for Hezbollah that they destroyed. Mm-hmm. And the guy is from the town that was hit, and he tells them that these claims that this was a weapons depot are outright Zionist lies.
Mm-hmm. So we have the Zionist lies, just like the TPN, which is a Zionist Israeli entity channel that says that it is legitimate to strike even residential areas. And then you have the actual owner of that privately owned company saying that it is not. That's very interesting to see. And I didn't see any of that on any Western media, for that matter, or Zionist media. The biggest evidence by seeing the man who owns the generator company, Mohammed Layla, saying that the media, whether it's local or Western, is more than welcome to come and investigate and inspect the area to see that it is actually a privately owned company. Definitely. In the area hit in Ghaziyya. Thank you very much, Fuad, for the extensive investigative reports and your analysis for this. Ladies and gents, now we move on to digital mainstream media. Now, the Hebrew media coverage of the ongoing fighting on the northern Palestinian front between Zionist Israel and the Lebanese Islamic Resistance Hezbollah over the course of 20 weeks, coinciding with the war on Gaza, indicates that the picture portrayed by the Western and Zionist Israeli mainstream media is very limited, and its margins are narrow to the point of being almost non-existent, as it is detailed to the scale of a military censor. With us is Ms. Julia Qasim, our mainstream media expert, to tell us more about this. Thank you for your efforts, Julia, with us every week. What do you have for us today?
Thank you, Marwa, for having me. The complete lack of coverage by both Zionist Israeli media and Western mainstream media on the situation in the north of occupied Palestine is heavily based on a complete gag order that the Zionist occupation military has put on both media alike. Mm-hmm. And this gag order is essentially based on three specific prohibitions. Mm-hmm. The prohibition from approaching the borders, the prohibition from filming soldiers, and the complete prohibition from filming locations and vehicles. Mm-hmm. So the result of these prohibitions is that it's made the image non-existent in Hebrew media outlets. But the shocking part is even information seems to be non-existent. Mm-hmm. So in many cases, the Israeli occupation army itself delays announcing Hezbollah's rocket attacks, as Hezbollah themselves have published very clear information on their operation, mm-hmm. resistance operations.
We do actually see those reports, even video reports about it every now and then, and specifically every day now, since over the past month, I think, of the operations that resistance is doing against the Zionist entity.
Yeah. You could see the juxtaposition in the consistent reports and the footage that Hezbollah has been showing of its operations against Zionist sites mm-hmm. from day one, in contrast to the Zionist entity's claims that they're hitting Hezbollah mm-hmm. sites on grainy footage and the reality of them just hitting civilian areas or open fields. Mm-hmm. So, for example, the Times of Israel published a report supposedly inspired by the Washington Post that Iran cautioned Hezbollah to not spark a full-scale war with Israel, claiming that the Islamic Republic fears risking alleged gains it believes it had made in the region since the October 7 Al-Aqsa flood operation in the Gaza enclave. Mm-hmm. So according to the Times of Israel, Iranian representatives told Hezbollah officials on their last visit that Netanyahu is squeezed in the corner now and Hezbollah should not give him a way out by launching a wider war because this would make him a winner. Mm-hmm. I keep in mind this dialogue was completely made up. Mm-hmm. So just 24 hours after the last Iranian Hezbollah meeting, according to Zionist media itself, not even announced by the resistance yet, that Hezbollah had killed a female Israeli soldier and injured eight other soldiers in the rocket attack targeting Israeli military bases in the occupied city of Safed in the Upper Galilee in northern occupied Palestine. Mm-hmm. So even the Zionist Israeli Minister of National Security, Itamar Ben-Gvir, considered this an actual war waged by Hezbollah against Israel.
Mm-hmm. Well, talk about being so late to talk about this war. It's been going on for the past 20 weeks. I mean, Ben-Gvir is a delusional man, but I think you have more for us on what mainstream media was talking about concerning the lies about the front between Lebanon and Zionist Israel.
So in addition to that, Marwa, the Chicago Tribune published an opinion piece by Daniel De Petraeus. Uh-huh. So with the title, A War Between Hezbollah and Israel is the Last Thing the U.S. Wants. So in his piece, Petraeus claims that, I quote, a large-scale Israeli campaign against Hezbollah, even if it were warranted, is the last thing the U.S. wants right now. So he also claims that the Biden administration has invested significant diplomatic capital into containing the fighting to Gaza and preventing it from spreading to other fault lines in the Middle East, reminding us that Austin, Secretary of State Antony Blinken, CIA Director William Burns, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs CQ Brown Jr., and President Joe Biden himself have all flown to the region in hopes of tamping down the flames of war.
Well, thank you very much, Ms. Julia Qasim, for being with us and telling us about how mainstream media, whether in the West or in Zionist Israel, was reporting about this front. Now, ladies and gents, let us move on to social media expose. Well, Western and Zionist media were able to run from the responsibility of truthfully reporting about the reality on the ground in South Lebanon, facing the resistance of the Lebanese resistance Hezbollah, but they were not able to hide from social media users who opted to expose their lies and, in specific, the concealment of damage caused by the strikes of the resistance in northern Palestine in specific. Now, with us today is our own social media expert, Ms. Seema Itayim, who is also an editor at The Cradle, to showcase how social media reacted to the lies of Western and Zionist media. The floor is all yours, Seema.
Thank you, Marwa. Well, regarding the Zionist strike that took place last week, just 30 kilometers away from the Lebanese capital, Beirut, in Saida, southern Lebanon, in the town of Ghaziyeh, users on social media were split between those who condemned this blatant attack on a residential area, a private-owned company in a residential area, and then there were others who ridiculed the video that was released by the Israeli occupation forces on their official media, attempting to justify why they carried out this attack to begin with.
So, Seema, I don't know whether to laugh or not, because it was a very tough target on the residents of Ghaziyeh, but I mean, they are opting to give excuses and pretexts for their targeting. Literally, this is the streets in 70% of Lebanese areas and neighborhoods.
Exactly. Actually, a tweet by War Monitor, a renowned account that we all know, on X, it perfectly describes this video. So War Monitor says, the Zionist terrorist proof that they struck a Hezbollah target in the Ghaziyeh area of Lebanon yesterday is flags and posters. While knowing there are thousands and thousands of these flags and posters across the south, pretty much on every single street.
That's the truth.
It is.
And it's so funny for me, because if this is what kind of propaganda the Zionist entity shows its people, it's like, I mean, sorry, that's a B-rated movie from Bollywood, not even Hollywood.
We shouldn't be surprised. I mean, everything is proof of a stronghold now.
Sorry for that.
And as usual, you know, you have the regular Zionist accounts who always blame the victim just for merely existing. Hence why the Zionist regime had no choice but to target and kill them.
Sorry, we existed, Zionist Israel, so go ahead, kill us.
Anything is proof. So another tweet, a disdainful post on X by Ron M., whose handle is at Jewtastic, sharing a video mix taken by a man from his balcony and another by university students who are returning home in a minivan at the end of their day, just as the airstrike took place, and they filmed it in horror.
So this was actually given a evidence of being is okay to hit? I mean, is this a reality pretext for hitting residential areas?
So he captioned this video by saying, Hezbollah have turned South Lebanon into a terrorist fortress, into Gaza. These are IDF strikes on Hezbollah terrorist sites in residential zones. Look at the massive secondary explosions as rockets and ammo explode. Look at the destruction Hezbollah will bring to Lebanon soon.
Wow.
Mind you, the Lebanese authorities' investigation concluded that both strikes targeted a privately owned motor generator manufacturing company and a wholesale tires company in Ghaziyeh. Yet for no reason other than wanting to be intentionally dishonest, Ron M. claimed that it was a weapons depot and that rockets were flying, not that bombs were being dropped from F-16 fighter jets.
I didn't see any rockets being fired or flown from the explosion site. Where did he see those? I mean, it's like blatant lying and the audacity of this hypocrisy.
Right, so he just described the impact as, you know, the impact was big, so it must be that they actually hit a depot because there's impact. And yes, according to him, weapons were there. And then there were anti-Zionist accounts, on the other hand, who pointed out the risk that the Zionist regime is taking by deliberately striking civilian areas in Lebanon. Like Daniel F. Prinsloo, who shared a video of the Ghaziyeh strike and said, Israel is now entering the phase where with confidence I can say they will be destroyed. These attacks in Lebanon are to allow a ground invasion by the IDF into Lebanon. Hezbollah is an organized and well-trained military. I am glad Israel's arrogance led to this. Israel's destruction will begin once they enter Lebanon. By these actions, Israel will lose northern Israel.
Well, thank you very much, Ms. Seema Itayim, for being with us and giving us the latest from how X was reacting to targeting residential areas in South Lebanon. Now, ladies and gents, we move to Figures Exposé. Now, an opinion poll revealed that 90% of the Lebanese hold the United States accountable for Zionist Israel's continued attacks on Lebanon and the Gaza Strip. A survey conducted by the Consultative Center for Studies and Documentation, a Beirut-based research institution on strategic and development studies, was conducted 4 months into the Zionist aggression on Gaza and included a sample of 400 people from various Lebanese sects and regions. When asked of the United States of America is the main reason behind the continued escalation and the failure to end the Israeli aggression, the poll found that across all sectors of Lebanon, 94% of Shias agreed, 92.4% of Sunnis agreed, 83.8% of Christians agreed, and 92.9% of the Druze sect agreed. The poll also found that two-thirds of those polled agreed that the Islamic resistance in Lebanon, Hezbollah, takes into account Lebanon's national interests in its support for the Palestinian people. Now, according to the poll, around 60% believed that Hezbollah's demonstration of strength would deter the Zionist Israeli entity from carrying out a comprehensive war against Lebanon. Now, let us move on to the most notable exposé voices for this week. You can find anything you want on TikTok, any commentary about any topic in the world on Instagram, Facebook, or on YouTube, right? Wrong. I personally spent 2 days doing a thorough research to find truthful, honest, and detailed information or even analysis from content creators to see if anyone mentioned the ongoing war in South Lebanon between the Lebanese resistance, Hezbollah, and the Israeli occupation forces. And I honestly found nothing except a couple of Western social media influencers who actually tackled the issue. Here is our first expose voice for today, coming from Preston Stewart on TikTok, who gave a news brief of the situation in South Lebanon. Let us see what Preston had to say in specific about the firepower capabilities of Hezbollah.
So when we're looking at the threat that Hezbollah poses to Israel, The Hezbollah leader a few years ago said that they had 100,000 people in their military. That's probably on the high side. Most estimates I've seen are closer to the 50 to 60,000 range. But that's a pretty sizable force. Right? I mean, Israel just mobilized their military and is saying they have 350, 360,000 ready to go. So you can't just brush aside 50,000 coming in from north, even on the low side. And that's not counting the reservists that could potentially join their ranks. Additionally, when talking about some of the Israeli strikes into Hezbollah territory there in the south of Lebanon, there's an increased risk of aircraft being shot down. So Israel has complete air superiority over Gaza. It's not really even contested at all. That's not the case when you start looking at Lebanon. Militant Wire did a great piece recently showing some of the Hezbollah military capabilities in that parade and in that military exercise. They were just showcasing their man pads, man portable air defense systems, and they got a lot of those. So no shortage of man pads. At the very least, Hezbollah has that capability. Now, there are some rumors about some other surface air missile systems that they may have. Now, if these were well known, I think Israel already would have tried to take these out, and they have tried to take these out at times in the past. But things like SA-17, SA-22, it's possible that Hezbollah has some of those. But either way, even if it's just the man pads, the threat to Israeli aircraft when they're moving north and engaging any targets in Lebanon is substantially higher than it is during the war over Gaza.
Another TikTok voice we will showcase here on Exposé is that of your favorite guy on TikTok. No, really, that is his username, that he posted a video about the war between Lebanon and the Israeli entity back in November, speaking about how Zionist Israel is bombing four countries at the same time. Here is your favorite guy.
In my opinion, I think that Hezbollah is going to get involved. Israel and Lebanon had a war in 2006 that killed 1,200 Lebanese people and 157 Israelis. On top of this, if we look to Syria, Israel's bombed Syria airports of Damascus and Aleppo like two times each since October 7th. Syria's two biggest airports. So right now we have Israel bombing Gaza Strip, the West Bank, Lebanon, and Syria. Four different places, four different areas. They really want war.
Now, some may ask, why are there not enough voices on the Western Internet speaking up about the Zionist Israeli crimes in South Lebanon in specific? Well, the answer is in this intimidation message by the president of the Zionist Israeli entity himself, Isaac Herzog.
But the truth is that we are fighting a war for the entire universe, for the free world. I always say, if Israel was not there, Europe will be next. Because these barbaric jihadists want to get all of us out of the region and want to get all of Europe out of its place as well. And United States is next too. So this war is something of an essential element in the history of humankind.
So apparently we here in Lebanon are barbaric jihadists that need to be eliminated. Typical Zionist demonization of an entire region is more than enough to make social media users hold back before commenting on Zionist Israeli crimes in my country, Lebanon. Ladies and gents, with that, we conclude our exposé for tonight. Stay tuned for more eye-opening investigations on Exposé. The truth is just a revelation away.
In the limelight.
Amid warnings by the United Nations of a looming famine in the blockaded Gaza Strip, which the United States enabled for nearly 5 months, Washington has now embarked on a new public relations campaign. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV wrote, three American military aircraft airdropped about 36,000 food parcels over a tiny region with a 2.3 million population, which has been reeling under U.S.-backed Israeli regime bombing since October 7th. Unsurprisingly, U.S. military cameras were on standby to capture the moment when the aid was being loaded into the aircraft at night and the cargo later dropped from the sky. Many rightly saw it as a photo opportunity to mitigate domestic and international public anger for Washington's direct complicity in the worst humanitarian catastrophe currently unfolding in Gaza. The flashlights were switched on to add that extra dramatic Hollywood-style war element to the whole charade, with troops loading the cargo on a C-130 Hercules military jet in the middle of the night. The U.S. Central Command published the videos for global news media outlets, many of whom played along by broadcasting the warlike footage. The Biden administration tried to get a message across that the U.S. military is helping to ease the suffering of Palestinians in Gaza while being the mastermind and architect of their colossal tragedy. The U.S. cargo landed along the Gaza coast, some in the sea itself, and for each U.S. food parcel, hundreds of starving and desperate Palestinians rushed to get a hold of it, drawing criticism from aid agencies and rights groups. Tens of thousands of others walked back to their makeshift tents, hungry and traumatized. For 5 months, they have been struggling to survive amid relentless bombings and crippling siege. The U.S. airdrops of food were inefficient because only small amounts of aid can be dropped at a time from a plane in what was a major operation for all the wrong reasons. It is another dark stain in the history books for the United States regime, which has allowed the Zionist regime to kill and starve families instead of applying pressure on Tel Aviv to at least turn the water taps back on. If the White House was serious about helping the starving Palestinians, Biden could ring Tel Aviv and force the regime to open the land crossings to Gaza for real aid to enter, a key demand of UN agencies. However, that is not the case. The United States regime is directly aiding and abetting this genocide. Historically, in cases such as the Second World War,